This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On the ABC Listen app.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you. In your town, your suburb.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt.
They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
So how much does parking, from available parking spots to the cost of parking, impact and affect you every day? If you're a retailer, can it reduce or sometimes increase your foot traffic, depending on the time limits, the free spots or the parklets? As a customer, do you shop where the parking is easy, where the parking is free? So everywhere from small country towns who are either installing and some removing parking meters to the ongoing debate of cafes creating parklets, parking is stressful. So how much pain does it cause in your life? Our number's 1300 222 774. And also coming up this hour, Jacinta Parsons joins me as always. And today we're talking about talkback, because it's World Radio Day. So what makes people call a radio station? And when has a talkback caller stopped you in your tracks? But how much pain does parking cause you? 1300 222 774.
Last night I heard the screen door slam.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Parking is stressful. It causes fights. It causes us so much tension. Sometimes you might be driving around and around looking for a park only to give up. You might be a retailer or a cafe owner or a business owner, and parking in your area was once free and now it costs money. Parklets, so those, pop-up cafes that really gained momentum during lockdown, they're still on the table for a lot of people but cause a lot of stress. So the idea of a little pop-up cafe in a parking spot. So why is parking continually so stressful in our lives, and is it causing dramas in your community? In some parts of regional Victoria, some are looking at introducing paid parking, and some local councils in regional Victoria are looking at removing paid parking altogether. Dr. Elizabeth Taylor, Senior Lecturer in Urban Planning and Design at Monash University, who has a special interest and love of all things parking.
Liz,
parking is stressful, like trying to get into parks that aren't big enough, having someone get upset at you because you've accidentally stolen their parking spot, to just there not being enough parking. Has it got more stressful? Has the world of parking become just more complicated?
I'd say it's always been stressful, and fundamentally it's because we're talking about public space and we're talking about a large amount of public space and a lot of people trying to get into that. So it's just sort of geometry, really. Like, cars are pretty big and parking spaces are big, and relative to the size of the place you're going, they're often more parking than cafe, for example. So that just fundamentally is an issue. And you also have, basically, it's demand question. So if the more popular an area is, the more demand there is for parking, and the more people are going to want to park right out the front. And that's when you get that intense feeling of going around and around. So you have that history over a century now of councils and interest groups trying to think of how do we maintain car access and fairly allocate parking. And it's never really gotten easier, except I'd say in those countries where they just get rid of street parking altogether, which is probably not on the table in Australia.
No, that's right. And this is not just a city issue. This is becoming more of an issue for regional areas, for small towns and small councils. There's a great story on our ABC News website that's been done by Nethma Dandy-Nayar looking at regional councils, some who are trying to remove paid parking altogether and some who are feeling like they need to introduce it. Does it even get more heated when it's a small country town?
I think anecdotally, yes, because I'm in a country town at the moment. People expect to park literally out the front, and if they have to walk you know, 3 meters, then it's a disappointment. So that's sort of upping the ante a bit above the city. But yeah, it varies by town and context. You have some towns where they're really struggling to attract any visitors to the retail strip, and in that case, really paid parking isn't a particularly useful tool, because what you use paid parking for is to make sure people are coming in and out, and so there's regular turnover in the parking spaces. So if you don't have visitors, you don't need paid parking. But you've got other towns, like, say, Ballarat's a constant headache, where you have a mix of workers, office workers, commuters, and then retailers that want people to come in and leave. Mm. And in that case, the paid parking kind of pleases some people and not others, because ideally you want, if you're thinking about from a retail turnover point of view, you want people to always be able to find a park, but for it not to be empty. So they sort of aim about 15-20%, but really we don't have the kind of tools to be that precise about it. So councils are either putting meters in or taking them out. And I know there's also an issue about the actual mechanism of the parking meters, so the cashless versus cash.
Yeah, I know. I get stressed every time I have to use one, and they're relative, and I avoid them like the plague. But they are relatively easy to use. But I don't know. I was just raised in a household where it's un-Australian to pay for parking. So I am that sucker that will drive around and around and around. And sometimes I'm closer to my house than I am the actual shop that I want to go to.
Yeah, it's a matter of principle for many people. They will not pay for parking. They might be prepared to pay $100 for a meal where they're going, but I'm not paying 50 cents to park there.
It's a matter of principle. Dr. Elizabeth Taylor is with you, a senior lecturer in urban planning and design at Monash University. We're talking about parking and the impact that it has on our lives. Another Elizabeth has called through, who's in Preston. How's the parking in Preston, Elizabeth?
Well, I live not far from Northland, and you go there and you've got these monster wagons and trucks.
Yep.
And they overhang the parking area they're allocated. And when you go to back out, you've got to deal with the rear end of them as well. And you think you're clear, and then all of a sudden you find there's a car that's been obscured by the rear end of the overhanging truck. I think they're very dangerous, and our death rates and that have been rising. And I seriously think we need to question the validity and whether these trucks are causing much of the...
What cars can park where? Elizabeth, you're not alone in being trapped in spots or not being able to get out. We've discussed this before, Dr. Elizabeth Taylor. Should super big utes and cars and SUVs, should there be places where they're not allowed to park or charge more if they're taking up two spots?
I'd just reiterate the previous caller's comment that they are associated with an increasing death rate and pedestrian fatality. So that's a pretty serious issue, and that's what transport researchers are seeing, that we've got more pedestrians dying than ever. So that's part of it. And then you've got the question of public space and so on. And it is harder when you already have, quote, normal-sized cars are reluctant to pay for parking. Having questions about, size-based parking rates is even harder, I think. But it's the same way that parking became so dominant in our cities over the last century. It's just incrementally new technologies come in, and then someone's got an interest, and it's hard to change that conversation.
I shop where the parking is free. If I have to pay to park, I'm more likely to go home and shop online. This is for Shepparton, where there is not a lack of room, but the council's decision for paid parking, it impacts the viability of businesses. And we need speed limits to keep the cars moving. That's from Simon. 2 points there. But Archie's actually in Shepparton. G'day, Archie. Do you know what this text Simon's talking about here?
G'day, guys. Yeah. I get what Simon's saying, because I work in Shepparton, and it's too expensive now, and I have to put my bike in the back of my car, and I just drive just out of town, and then now I get on my bike and I ride the rest of the way to work.
Yeah. Are you happy? Are you happy about that, Archie?
It's good for my fitness, because I'm playing football and I can't get to trainings most night. But it's just a shame, because it was nice to drive the car to work, but now when I leave my bike at the front of the cafe, these kids keep letting the air out of my tyres.
Oh, what?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's pretty horrible.
Far out, Archie. What a pain. You need to put a little camera on your... Well, they'll probably steal the camera, but you need to put a little camera on your bike.
I've got a little pump in my backpack that I keep. So it's all good. It's just fun, but yeah, it's just the parking, and it's we need to do something about it.
Yeah, and it's interesting that, I mean, you're the second person that sent that from Shepparton. There's texts here. Good on you, Archie. Good luck with the footy season this year. Sounds like you're finding a creative way to keep fit, mate. Thank you. This, I remember Morwell in the 1960s when they introduced parking meters. True, ooh, they're all gone now. But yeah. I live in Melbourne and 1969, I don't know where they've gone and how they've got rid of them. So places like Morwell, they've got rid of them.
They come in and out, and I mean, even thinking about Melbourne, the centre of Melbourne and the suburbs, they've all had those moments of, you know, quite heated decision to put in parking meters. And it usually comes out of a particular point in time when there's a lot of traffic, a lot of pressure on the space, a lot of competition for customers. And then if the situation changes, then you might be taking them out again. So there's no hard stats on taking them in and out, but it's definitely, it's never really been resolved. And I'd say one of the biggest issues is that there's just consistently no real evaluation of what happens when you put them in or take them out. You might end up, like Yarraville was probably the most extreme example, where they got put in and then they got taken out because someone got beaten up at the council meeting, if you recall.
Oh, my goodness. One of the, this is how hated parking gets.
Yeah.
This is the thing. Dr. Elizabeth Taylor is with you. We're talking about parking and just the stress it causes in our lives from having to pay for it, having to find it, whether you're a shopper or a business owner. In the peak of COVID, it had actually been around for a while, but in the peak of COVID, Liz, we saw parklets introduced. So people can remember parking spots that were converted into little pop-up areas for cafes and restaurants because we needed all of the space. And so then there was argy-bargy around, should they stay there? Are they taking up too much space? Councils started to try and charge cafes and restaurants for the space, and they started to filter away a little bit. However, just last week, new research has come out from RMIT saying that we should actually look to expand and innovate these parklet policies and introduce them more, and not just in the heart of the city and in the heart of suburbs, but into little high streets. How do you feel about parklets?
I think parklets, yeah, they've been around for 20 years and they've raised a lot of really great questions about how we use space and the potential for streets to change them, because their advantage is always that they could be quickly installed and then you see how they go and then you can experiment with their design. And they started off in that way where you're just taking one individual space and having somewhere to sit, and then you get maybe people thinking, oh, maybe we could change that here. So that has been great about the kind of conversation from parklets. But over their 20 years, and that's from research by Quentin Stevens and others coming out, they have changed. They've become less kind of pop-up DIY and a bit more something that councils do with retailers. And that's a bit trickier, because rather than just being places where people sit or, you know, socialise and so on, they're more typically an extension of the restaurant, cafe, so on. And that was really amped up in COVID because we had those restrictions. We had something like 700, I think, in Melbourne put in to enable those retailers to survive. But that's a bit tricky. It's slightly closer to private space. And it does mean you have to have a discussion about who's the space for and should people pay for it. The exact same discussion as parking. And I think it's also tricky that in that study and others, they've shown that the ones that really succeeded, ironically, they were in places that already had a lot of foot traffic, because that's really what retailers want in the end.
Foot traffic,
people,
absolutely.
Not cars. Yeah, so
I wanted
doesn't
to,
work as well.
Liz, before we have a chat to Paul, who's in Berwick, there's a lot of people texting in from Shepparton today. If you are working in your local council, you've got to do something about your parking in Shep. But here's another from Shep. It says, we used to shop in Shepparton. We hardly ever go now because of the paid parking. It's just too much, especially if you're 5 minutes late. When we look at how we shop, and we had a text earlier saying, if I can't get a park, I'll just go home and buy online. Are we pushing people to shopping centres and not to small retailers because the parking is seen as easier in shopping centres and cheaper? You know, a lot of the times it's first 2 or 3 hours for free.
Well, in a big malls, I think they've got a really interesting history, because as a design response, they tried to emulate a pedestrianised shopping mall inside and then you have the parking outside. So people are often happier to go to Chadstone and others, because then you get to walk around, but your car's out there. So they're happier to walk further in those malls, I think possibly because they create a better pedestrian atmosphere, which is in some ways what parklets are trying to do. So councils have a really tricky position where they often they've bought up and bulldozed whole blocks to put in parking to try and get that same effect in strip shopping, and people don't seem to go for it the same way.
Mm.
But we have across the board problem with what you'd call bricks and mortars retailing is really suffering from online shopping, and that does heighten the discussion around parking and what's the specific advantage of a place. And I think in small towns, it's really hard, and Shepparton, and I would include that there. What you've seen in the city and a lot of inner suburbs, I guess, is that consumption is, you know, the cafe lifestyle, that kind of thing, is what people go to strips for. They're not going to buy a coffee online. I suppose you could, but it'd be quite gross by the time it arrived.
I know people
but
who
you
would
might
do that.
Buy your, yeah, you spoke too soon. So that's the edge that those places have. People go there because they want to hang around and so on. So how does a strip shopping centre in Shepparton kind of provide that experience? And it's different in the country. Things that work in the city might not work there. And then you've got that overlay of retailing across the board.
Absolutely.
Suffering from online shopping is really hard.
Paul, thanks for waiting. Paul's in Berwick. Morning.
Yeah, good morning. How are you?
Yeah, really good. What did you want to say?
I just wanted to talk about hospital parking because I've got three women in my family. We women in our family suffer from a thing called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And I spend a lot of time, and we all, the family, spend a lot of time visiting and staying with the family, with my daughter, my granddaughter, my sister. And when they go to hospital,
it costs
a fortune. Now, I'm lucky I can probably afford it, but I hate paying it. But you know, the best thing that people in hospital can get, as far as medicine go, is family visiting them. You know, it's nothing is more healing than that. And yet, here we have, you know, it actually detracts from, you know, there are plenty of people who can't even afford it.
Yeah.
And it's very expensive.
Paul, you are not alone. I mean, we've done entire programs on hospital parking, and we probably won't go into all of it now, Liz, but it's a huge issue, the privatisation of parking in hospitals, Paul's family or the women in his family having to pay visitors, you name it. If you're in and out of hospital or you're caring for someone that's in and out of hospital, a lot of people just simply can't afford the parking.
Yes, it's probably the most extreme example of the pressures of parking and all the equity effects of it. And it's unfortunately in a hospital situation, you just have you've got people that work there, you have night shift, you've got the visitors, you've got the patients. And with all those competing pressures, it's really tricky to sort of ever have enough parking or have the right length of parking, because some people are going to be there for days and some people are short visits. I did see a bit of work done about hospital parking in Brisbane, but ultimately I think that's one where we have to centre, I guess, caring about people rather than the financial value of the parking.
Always good to speak with you, Liz. Thank you.
Thanks, Rochelle.
See you. Dr. Elizabeth Taylor, Senior Lecturer in Urban Planning and Design at Monash Uni. Apologies if I didn't read out your text on this, because it does annoy us, doesn't it, parking? Everything from fines to, I mean, we didn't even touch on the fact that sometimes to read the signs to figure out if you can park there on that day, in that time frame, for how long, on what angle. Is it just me where you stand there and you really have to read it like three or four times to figure out whether or not you're allowed to be there? But a big representation from Warrigal today too on parking. Quite a few texts. This one just from Alan. In the 70s, Warrigal had a vote on installing parking meters. The vote lost, but the council had already bought the parking meters, so they installed them anyway. So if you want to read more about this story, you can go to ABC News Online as well, where a story's been done by Nethma Dandy-Naya on parking in regional areas and whether or not your local council is installing or removing parking meters. I got this message from Helen, so I just want to read it out to you. And it says, Rich, this is unrelated to your current topics this morning, but I'm driving on the M80 towards Greensboro, and there is already a really large sign that says Cooper Woods wins gold for Australia. That turnaround time is incredible. The stop sign is large. It's attached to one of the overpasses or one of those overhanging signs, but it's an incredible turnaround time to get a sign up that large on the bridge in less than 12 hours. So maybe you've driven past it and seen it as well. Thanks for keeping us up to date, Helen. In about 5-10 minutes' time, Jacinta Parsons is joining me, and today we're talking about TalkBack because it is World Radio Day. So have you ever called TalkBack? Have you ever been too scared to call TalkBack? And is there a TalkBack caller that has stopped you in your tracks? That's coming up in just a moment.
On the
ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
So here's something else to make you feel old. The Melbourne Fashion Festival turns 30 this year. So that means it started in the 90s, right? I still feel like the 90s was yesterday. I still question someone's driver's license when it says they were born in the 90s. I'm like, you're not allowed in here. But if you think about what you were wearing in the 90s, it's very similar to what's being worn now. Lots of Doc Martens, 501s, the old petticoat, maybe your grandparents' pajama bottoms. So now 90s fashion is back, but maybe we need to add a little bit of tech to our outfits. And that is a big focus of the Melbourne Fashion Festival this year. So fashion designer and Swinburne fashion lecturer Jai Marshall is running an event called the Emerging Wearable Technologies Workshop. Jai, it's a really broad concept when we look at tech and fashion. So what do you mean by wearable tech?
Yeah, Rochelle, we're really excited about this particular workshop. We're going to be focusing on mainly sports performance wearable tech. So in this week's workshop, we're going to be looking at how we can add sensors and conductive fibers to improve people's health, well-being, and improve their running styles, and also in a range of different sports. I think it's quite exciting that fashion is once this piece of fabric now turned into a super tech kind of fashion piece.
Think Thorpe and his suit that he wore and how controversial it was, but it changed swimming. So can fashion make me a better runner, or can it make me run, period?
I don't know if it's going to be able to make you run, but okay. I guess one of the big purposes...
It's not going to push me out the door, right?
Yeah, it could. We're really trying to create what is called quiet technology. So some of the research we've been looking at is that there's been a lot of negative mental health aspects for athletes, constantly looking at their smartwatches, looking at the metrics, being disappointed that they're not running or hitting these goals. And one of our goals at the Swinburne Wearables Lab is to really understand how we can create a running shirt or wearable devices that I guess encourage people to run and run better and monitor their pace, their style, their posture, while not distracting them by technology. So I guess the game or the aim of creating wearable technology in sport is really to get them less reliant on technology and more enjoying the sport itself.
Does it give you positive affirmations as you're running? You know, like, you are doing great. Don't stop.
It could. You know, the possibilities are endless. And I think at the workshop this weekend, we're going to see some really crazy ideas. I mean, at the moment, we're focusing mainly on vibrations and LED lights. So LED lights flashing when you're running to kind of encourage you to keep up that pace or maybe go a little bit faster. But hey, it could be shouting out affirmations as well.
I mean, it would help for safety reasons as well. Yesterday we were talking about whether or not women feel safe to go hiking alone or camping alone or running alone. It's getting really dark of a morning now. So when we look at tech in to clothes and exercise wear, could it potentially help from a safety perspective?
Absolutely. Yesterday I did a lap around the town in one of our wearable technologies prototype, and It does attract a lot of people, a lot of eyes, because it's quite new, and I'd be really keen to hear if your listeners are interested in wearing a wearable technology.
Do you need guinea pigs?
I do. It does create a real spectacle, and I think people were really interested yesterday when I was running around the town, like, what is this flashing light doing? Who is this person? I think it would create more safety features for runners, particularly those who are going at night.
And what did it tell you when you got to the top of Anderson Street Hill?
But I'm not running fast enough, that's for sure.
No one does. Oh, 1-300-222-774. If you're interested in fashion tech, if this is something that you would wear, Jai Marshall is with you, a fashion designer and a fashion lecturer. This will be a workshop that's on as a part of Melbourne Fashion Week. Can you believe, I mean, I'm old enough to remember the first ones. I went to some of the first fashion weeks. It's turning 30. How is that possible?
I know. It's crazy. It's really gone so fast. And originally, Melbourne Fashion Week around that 1996 was really introduced because of the removal of fashion tariffs. So we had a flood of this fast fashion coming in, and Melbourne Fashion Week and Melbourne Fashion Festival, it's had many different names, was really established to kind of reboot the manufacturing economy and really try and make Melbourne that hub, that fashion hub. As much as Sydney always want to try claim that they're the fashion capital, I think Melbourne has a pretty good right to say that we do most of the manufacturing of fashion in Melbourne. And really, this runway was to really promote that.
So who can come along to these workshops to learn about it? Like, do you need skills?
No, absolutely not. Anybody.
Just an interest.
To the general public, it's free. I think the best thing about Fashion Week now is that it's somewhat less about seeing garments on a runway, but it's so much more interactive. It's getting people to think about ways that we can approach fashion in such a different way.
I'm thinking about even how it helps the tech fashion helps for quite serious health benefits as well. So, I mean, a very close friend of mine has diabetes, and just looking at the technology that she has now for monitoring her glucose levels, for example, or if you had a heart condition and, you know, you needed to be told, you know, if you needed to be careful or slow down or whatever it might be. So I can really see the future of that. Just finally, Jai, 30 years. So started in the 90s. 90s fashion is back now. What's some of the best sort of key pieces of 90s fashion, do you think? Is it the Doc Martens? Is it the 501s?
Yeah, I think it is the Doc Martens, and I find it so interesting. You know, every year when I get a new cohort of fashion students come in, it's really interesting to see what kind of taste they're in. And it's so interesting to see that these trends just recycle and again in these kind of periods. Look, I'm a big fan of the 90s fashion. I think you've hit it right on the head there with those iconic boots. I think you can't go too wrong with them. And the greatest thing is, you know, you can, I know we speak about this all the time, but op shops have some really great 90s fashion, and it's so great to be able to jump in there and find some good fun.
Absolutely. There was nothing like trying to get your 12-up steel cap Doc Martens on after you'd had one too many Midoris back in the 90s.
I love it.
That's a skill within itself. Good on you, Jai. Thanks so much. Jai Marshall, who'll be running the Emerging Wearable Technologies Workshop. So if you want details on that workshop, you can go to the Melbourne Fashion Festival website. It's mfw.melbourne.vic.gov.au. Coming up next, it is World Radio Day. So Jacinta Parsons and I are talking about talkback. Have you ever called talkback? What makes somebody call talkback? What makes somebody share sometimes their most intimate, their most personal stories with all of Melbourne, all of Victoria, sometimes worldwide? What makes you ring a radio station? And can you remember a talkback caller that stopped you in your tracks?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is the Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
May I just say, happy World Radio Day, Dr. Jacinta Parsons.
This is the most thrilling moment of my life because I'm newly minted PhD kid. And when can you use it? Like, everyone says, oh, do this. But this is the only, when we're talking about radio, and I'm your guest,
yeah.
I'm a doctor.
I know, man.
Dr. Parsons.
I know.
That's so cool, isn't it? It's
Why
such
do
a
I not
fraud.
Refer to you as doctor, like, all the time?
No, because how inappropriate.
No.
I'm not cut in the shape of a doctor.
What does that mean?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just
Don't
saying
put yeah. it. Yeah. Any stereotypes on
I mean,
who a doctor is
Dr.
and what a doctor
Hunt. It could happen. Why wouldn't you?
Why not,
it's just
baby?
The most outrageously delightful outcome of just doing a bit of study. Like, what a ridiculous thing.
No, it's not
anyway,
ridiculous.
Yes.
I love it. Because
love it.
The thing is, it is actually quite serious. And today is World Radio Day. So this day was designed by UNESCO, right, to add some serious weight to it, back in 2011. And it is a day, I kid you not, to thank radio broadcasters for the news that they deliver, the voices they amplify, and the stories they share.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Because I think that's, well, no, thank you.
Thank you, Doctor.
This is so awkward, isn't it? People
it is.
Listening going, you know what, shush it a little bit. But you know what? So my thesis that I did was all about us and our community and this radio station, because so much of academic kind of focus, and I think also in the media, is about the shock jocks, the ones that divide potentially for ratings, etc. But there is so much crucial, incredible work happening for the joining of us together. Like, there is no other site, there is no other format that in a live moment you can talk about something and hear genuinely diverse perspectives that have a space to be.
Well, it's the real voice. So can I tell you something? I don't know if I've ever told you this. So the first time I was ever on radio was because I called Talkback.
Oh, my God.
I called to get my dream interpreted on Triple J.
With Quentin. You know what? I heard in the background that France – oh, no, I can't say that. Anyway, I loved that segment.
Yeah, I called and then my cousin rang me later to say, I just heard you on the radio. I'm like, I know.
What was the dream? I mean, quite frankly, I want to know.
Well, it was my friend's dream and, like, quite seriously, it was actually my friend's dream. And we were in a car together and the car crashed and kept rolling and rolling and rolling and rolling. And then I think Quentin said, it's where you're going in life and where you end up or something. I don't know. Yada, yada, yada. We're still mates 40 years later.
Wow. Mm. So, you know, you went through a few tussles, whatever. But how good is it? Yeah. I used to, which I talk about a little bit, but when I was 8 and I tried to find the tapes, I would make radio shows in my bedroom.
Same.
So, like, look at the man and what he maketh, you know, like at 7 and 8, as they say. Did you really?
I really did. And I did. Or I would say to my friends, hey, you want to go into my room and tape ourselves? And they'd be like, nah, man, I want to go jump on the BMX, you weirdo.
I used to pretend, I used to do the voice of Bob Hawke onto a tape. Then I would do live radio shows for my family where I would ask him a question, press the tape, he would answer. So good.
1-300-222-774. Have you ever called Talkback? What makes somebody call Talkback? And is there a caller that has floored you? The other thing that...
You've got so much to say about
this. I know. I've got so much to say about this as well.
I did a PhD though.
Yeah, I didn't.
Can you come to me as an expert? Keep going.
I watched a lot of movies about Talkback Radio. Sleepless in Seattle.
Is this what happened to us, that we watched this pop culture?
Sleepless in Seattle. Can I take you back there?
Oh, please.
If you've just tuned in, this is Dr. Marcia Fieldstone, and tonight's topic is your wishes and dreams.
Yeah, I got it.
And we're on the line now with someone from Seattle.
Hello.
Hello, Sam. This is Dr. Marcia Fieldstone on Network America.
Okay, what are you selling tonight?
I just want to help. I want you to know that your son called, and he asked me for some advice on how you might find a new wife.
Who is this?
Dr. Marcia Fieldstone of Network America, and you are on the air.
You called a radio station?
Dr. Jacinta Parsons. What I love about that little bit is, yes, people call a radio station. They call it to share the most intimate moments, to pass on information that they think that people should know. Sometimes the first instinct from our listeners is not to call mum or dad or their partner, is to call us.
And we love those texts that tell us what you're buying at the shops. But can I really, this is what the work was for me, and a beautiful reflection on being a Talkback Radio broadcaster is the incredible offering of an audience, and that this is a collaboration. There's nothing like this where you get to make something live with an audience. And what the audience brings is paramount. That's all we really,
next level.
It's all we care about. And so we kind of create scenarios where, and the generosity of what people do for the betterment of the world around them.
Oh, and for their immediate community.
And how
as well.
They're impacted. It's a lean in. And I think this is the whole point. We are so told so often, all the news is about how horrific we are as communities and people. We're just not.
No.
You hear radio, and when you are presenting concepts and ideas that are not agreed upon and are difficult and challenging, one of my favorite calls ever was a woman calling up and just saying, I just calling, and it's probably not the right thing to say, but I don't get it. I don't understand transgender stuff. To have that vulnerability and humility to ask a question, to be open to maybe understand and lean into stuff.
That's just giving me goosies.
It's so special. This is like, how many millions of these experiences do we
have? Oh, I've got to tell you about one in just a tick that was on Raph's show. But let's go to Marcus, who's in Pakenham. Morning, Marcus. Good morning, caller. Good morning.
Is the doctor there?
The doctor is here.
Hi, I'm a doctor. How can I help you, Marcus? Have you got a rash?
Well,
I actually spoke to you on the radio, and it was just when you were doing the afternoon shows. It was the week or so that you finished. You had an article about things that got lost.
Oh,
and you had a lady called Marg Hannah ring you up, and she told you about a silver pendant that was lost in London.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that afternoon, I was outside doing some work on my car with the craddiest old radio I've ever had, and I recognised Marg Hannah's voice, and I listened, and I rang you, and I spoke to you, because I was the man that found that.
See?
Do you remember that?
I absolutely remember that. Oh,
yeah.
And just like this, don't you, at the magic of that, like, how do you describe it? Because how else do we see those connections with each other in the most unbelievable ways than something like radio? Oh,
exactly. But I must tell you, I was in the UK a few years ago, and talkback radio was, I didn't have TV. I was living in a caravan. I was living through floods. I wasn't in a good place, but talkback radio was an absolute lifesaver.
Yeah. This is said by so many people. And just really quickly, Rochelle, because I know you want to move on.
But no, I don't want to move on. I'm just saying, but this is what people say.
That's it. So Marcus, for you, because I know that feeling too. Like,
yeah.
I turn it on because I think the fact it's live and it's local is really important, because we feel like we aren't alone.
And because they're real people and they're real stories, and everyone's showing that vulnerability. And for something that's so intimate, Marcus, thank you so much for calling. And I'm so glad that Talkback Radio was that friend that you needed, because that's what it's all about.
And Silver Pendant Guy.
Yeah, I know. How helpful is that too? And we just connect people so often. And we heard a lot during lockdown. I'm sorry to say the word lockdown, but, you know, let's say it. But thank you. I still get thanks. Thank you for lockdown.
People
you know, you
cry.
Are my companion.
And I felt the same way. Like, people will say, oh, my God, thank you. And that's what happens. But I have a similar experience of, if you were with us in that time, we know each other in a way.
Intimate way.
That doesn't, like, you know, they talk about parasocial. I don't actually feel that. I feel actually, you know, we went to that birthday party of that woman last week, gorgeous Terry, and, you know, we didn't know her, but you do
you go to her
in some way.
This is the thing.
Do you know what I mean? You know them because we've all shared a love of Andrew Crook or all
or
the things we go through.
Or it gives you permission, right? So I can remember in the middle of lockdown standing in my kitchen cooking bolognese in activewear, because that's all we all wore for months on end, and a woman calling Raph, and it was a part of Changing Tracks, and she was talking, her husband had died, and she painted the picture so beautifully about standing in the middle of her greengrocer and all of a sudden hearing that song. I think it was a Powderfinger, you know, these days turned out nothing like I, you know, had
imagined,
thought or seen or imagined or whatever. And the way she told it, and then, of course, Raph plays the song, I whole body sobbed, like fell to the ground, sobbed. It gave me, that caller, that story gave me the permission to let go of everything I was holding on to.
I think what that time of lockdown did, sorry to say that word again, everyone, as you're twitching, what it did was actually just clarify and amplify what Talkback Radio does all the time. Every day, every week, I promise you, I am stopped and people say to me, remember Avis?
Oh, yes.
I've
don't
got goosebumps,
even go there.
And I wrote about her in my thesis, because what that was about how we can connect through voice. Voice is this incredible, has a way for intimacy that no other thing has. Like, we're vulnerable, but we can be as real as we like to be, because we're not being watched and we don't need to perform.
And people can floor you. I remember a farmer ringing me in tears. Warwick Long and I were talking about, and it's not all sad, by the way. It's not all this sad panda stuff. There's also joy. But I remember for the first time we introduced the listeners to the concept of school refusal, because a woman had reached out to us. No one had knew about it. No one was talking about it. People were
shame
wondering,
around it.
Well, no one even knew it had a label. They were just thinking, why the hell won't my kid go to school? I am so alone. And a farmer rang us, and he was out in the middle of the field on his tractor listening to it, sobbing, because he finally realised he wasn't alone, that there were other people that were going through this as well. He's like, I would never call Talkback Radio in my life, but he did. Oh, Abraham's in Geelong. Morning.
Abraham.
Hang on.
Abraham. This is a classic talkback radio moment.
It is.
I heard Barry Jones and his one of his
back on hold.
Barry Jones was one very first broadcasters. He was the first talkback radio host in Melbourne. Those talkback callers, he goes, please turn off your radios in the background. And I thought, oh, my God, nothing has changed.
Nothing
has changed.
Abraham, are you all right now?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I was good. Just changing from the truck radio to the phone because I'm in a truck.
Oh, you're in a truck. We love being in trucks. It always makes me feel like I'm working when I'm with you in a truck.
What do you want us to talk about?
I was calling because probably in the last year I started driving trucks full time. And previously I was doing the talkback radio effectively by going on Facebook. And I was getting really the angst and the anger and the disconnection from who the person was that was talking to you. Now, I listen to ABC Talkback, and I don't always agree. In fact, I often don't agree. But I hear the people, and I hear the person, and it's so much better.
When you're driving, Abraham, that companionship is often what we hear about, but you're also in this actual bubble, right? You're in this small space. That must be intense listening for you.
Well, yeah, it's the only obviously I can listen to my podcasts and whatever else, but I find that the talkback, even when I intensely disagree, it's just an actual person that I'm disagreeing with rather than a concept or
yes. And then in that way, it helps also to clarify and challenge the way you think because you go, okay, I don't agree with that. What do I agree with? What do I think? How would I articulate it? That's the whole activity of
But then sometimes
being
you go, oh, actually, good point. Because it's coming to you not from an academic. It's coming to you not from someone who, no offense to doctors, as there's one sitting in front of me, but it is coming to you from a real person. 1-300-222-774. You can text 0437-774-774. Yes.
I'm being naughty because I just want to talk all the time. Yeah. I've got two of my favourites.
Yep.
Everyone's talking about Bat Batch. Oh. Can you imagine, though, that we have now a language for ABC Radio Melbourne? We can say to each other Bat Batch. And for those of you who don't know, it's a long story. Let's not go into it. But it's collective terminology. And the second story was when Brian Nankervis and I had a detective agency. A woman came in and said, look, I've got this tape of my brother when he was 18.
Oh, that's right.
Singing love songs to a girl, but he died. He drowned. And we don't know who she is and we want her to have this tape. We found her 40 years later because of radio, and they are now friends and connected, and she got her love songs.
Oh, I remember that. I cried. Speaking of movies and being influenced in a way that maybe we didn't realise at the time, did you ever watch Pump Up the Volume with Christian Slater?
Oh, yes, I did.
Oh, can I take you back there?
Please do.
He's got a pirate radio station. Nobody knows who he is.
I could be that anonymous nerd sitting across from you.
And then you turn around and he just looks away. He never looks back at you again.
How good was this movie?
The idea that a voice can just go somewhere.
Uninvited. Like a dirty thought in a nice clean mind.
Christian Slater has got so much to answer for. I watched Hair this the other day and I was like, dude, that is intense stuff you're doing.
That took me back to like my first kind of real like crush, like, whoa,
I know.
Who is this dude?
But that the beautiful, I mean, and everyone always when I talk about radio brings up Casey Kasem. And the gorgeous thing about Casey Kasem, who did America's Top 40, is I was an 8-year-old sitting in a Holden HJ driving home from Nana's house on a Sunday. And I'm listening to the same radio that someone is doing across the world as well. And that collective listening at the same time that we don't get with streaming as well, I just think is such a beautiful connector with each other. You discover things while you're doing it as a community.
Peter's in Marrickville. Hi, Peter.
Oh, hey, Rish, and hey, Doc JP.
Yeah, bring it on, baby.
Hey, JP was just talking about Bat Badge and language, and it's like a family language because 774, it literally has a family. And Fiona of Marrickville and myself, we are 774 family members, and you guys are members of our family. So in 2021, we made the decision to move from Sydney to Melbourne, but Fiona and Little Legs made the advance move. So they were here for 2 years while I was in Marrickville getting our house together. And 774, particularly Afternoons and JP, connected us. We used to talk to each other via JP over the airways. So I'd talk to Fee and she would talk to me and we would both talk to JP. And it was just...
That is so
connected.
Special. This is the people say, you know, you need a World Radio Day. And this is why, because it's to thank radio broadcasters. Dr. Parsons, thank you for doing that.
But also, this is as beautiful, Peter, who's been a part of my life with Fiona and Little Legs. You know, like this is part of my life as well. We are a family. This is collaborative medium that we never have. We sit in these beautiful seats to transfer to each other. This community.
Something that is so public and so private all at the same time.
We can talk about the public and private sphere and Habermas if you want because...
Oh, this is why you're a doctor.
Baby, that's what I can do.
This is from Helen in Northcote. Rochelle, hi Rochelle and Jacinta. 774 ABC Radio Melbourne got me through many, many dark days after our baby daughter died. I'll always be grateful for those voices who kept me company when I really didn't want to keep going.
Oh.
A lifesaver.
And see, that's everyone listening now on. And contributing. That is the like the soundscape of our people and our lives. We're diverse. We probably need to be more diverse in our audience and certainly across our media landscape so that we are capturing different frames of the world so that we can actually, you know, challenge mm-hmm. and think together. Get it on my high horse.
Oh,
love it.
Do it.
Getting
doctor.
On a high horse,
do
baby.
It. Frank's in Warrigal. Hi, Frank.
Hi.
Hey.
I was just reminded of when Lindy Burns used to be on in the afternoons and she said, tell us about a time when you found something that you didn't think somebody meant for you to find. And we were going through boxes after my mother passed away in Canada and we found this box that was full of all of our report cards and assignments. And this is people with multiple degrees at university, etc. And it said on the box, not a rocket scientist in that lot.
Wow. That's and, thanks
and
for that.
And Lindy kind of giggled and then kind of went, oh, no, I shouldn't be doing that.
How great, though. Like, and then the publicness of stories that are, you know, that belong also to all of us, the universality. There was a really mean ABC, an article in a paper about Sammy Shah and I, but there was hundreds of those. Mm. We can go back and have a look. And there was a critique on the banality and the vacuous nature of talkback, because apparently we'd asked the audience at some point what Apple was their favorite. So then we actually did that because I don't think we had. Do you know what?
Our
that
people are
illuminates,
into Apple.
But what we find from these small, banal expressions of our daily life is articulation of the bigger things. When you talk about that, it's a story from your past.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where you ate them in the orchard, who, you know, all of that.
The thing that we've witnessed change with talkback radio over the years, though, is texts. Now, we even know in our real lives, we don't call our friends half the time anymore. We text them. We have a lot of listeners who are texters and not callers. The people who text sometimes are very different to the people who call. The sort of abuse that you get on texts are very different to the people that call. The running commentary. I had a guy just yesterday, everything I said, wanted to make some kind of smart-ass comment to me and running commentary on what I was doing badly. It was great.
So we get a lot of that. Yeah. But I think once you grow a thick skin to it, there's also an openness to it. When people text in and critique genuinely, it's like, okay, I really want to think about it. I think it's really true. I had something else to say, so many things say. Keep going. No,
that's all right. Let's have a chat to Denise who's in Torquay. Good morning.
Good morning. I just want to talk about the story behind a kind of popular story that I shared once with Jacinta.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the woman hanging upside down.
Oh, I'm so glad you called.
Well, there is text for you, Denise.
I am.
Oh,
Denise.
My God. There's text for you remembering the woman who hung upside down and I couldn't breathe your description.
To set it up, Denise, you sent in a text talking about how you got stuck in a pair of boots hanging from your door frame. Jacinta started to laugh so much that she couldn't talk. Do you know, Denise, I actually had to pull over because I did a little bit of wee in my pants because I laughed.
And
just
John Standish
so much.
Is sitting behind the glass here. And it's really important to note when we're talking about radio, the producers of radio shows are the people that you first speak to. They love our audience and feel other things sometimes in such massive amounts, you know. Like, and John took that call, I reckon, when you called through, Denise, to put it through. Yes, exactly.
So, Denise, are you now, like, known as Denise, the woman who got stuck in her boots hanging from the doorframe?
With my friends, I am, yes. But I just wanted to say something about where I was at that time, because we were just nearing the end of COVID, but I had, a couple of months prior, broken my leg in an accident, and we were in lockdown, and there was no, at that stage, there was no infrastructure for physios or anything like that, so I was on my own. And I was, like, trying to be brave and stoic all the way through it. And then I sent that text that day and found myself just wheezing with laughter. So much of Victoria. And I realised how much I had kept inside me. Yeah. Oh, like, I was busy being so strong that I wasn't allowing myself any kind of emotion.
Yeah.
And that moment just let it all...
Denise, that's how I started. That's what happened to me with the woman who called Raf. It gave me permission to sob, to convulse, to just let it all out. And that's what other people do for us. That's what
and I
real
reckon,
people
Denise,
do.
Definitely for me, and continues in my life, I've played your stuff into people overseas, is you also, like, the joy and the love that you bring in that story, and then you have a laugh with me, and then you send a picture that you've hand drawn of yourself in the door jam. Like, what you also did then for others who are listening in, because you're prepared to kind of step in and share and be the callers that we have who do those things, you know, often. Like, thank you.
Are you still using the boots, Denise, just quietly? No.
Do I what?
Do you still use the boots that you hang?
Hell no.
No. No. We never really get to the end of that story.
No. I threw them over the balcony.
Her head nearly exploded, Rochelle. How much do we have to explain this to you?
Getting back on the horse, getting back in the boots.
I love you, Denise. No. We do love you, Denise. That means so much to hear that backstory. I cannot tell you.
This text, two words, Granny Smith.
Do you know what I mean?
Boom.
And then 100%. It goes in.
I
and
am
then
so
there's feelings.
Into Granny Smiths at the moment.
I'm against them. Like, it's the same things I had about iceberg lettuce. Like, get off.
What?
Step out.
Why?
It's
why
so old iceberg? School and, like, oh, because it went through that kind of, you know, era.
It's crunchy.
It's really
it's
good.
It's fresh.
I was wrong.
It adds
I was
texture
wrong.
To a sandwich.
But it was so daggy when all the other ones came in. The butter and the rocket. And the
Radicchio.
All of that.
I'm back on iceberg.
Oh, my
Absolutely.
God. Can I just read this really quickly? Denise, I can remember exactly the moment this happened. I was driving around a baby to get him to sleep. He's now a bigger kid. Had to pull over in stitches. I'm still trying to find it when I feel down. That story gave me so much joy and the delivery and reading it. Love, says Jess in Geelong. Like, crazy. And the fact that Bat Vag actually calls herself Bat Vag in the world.
This is what we do. Julie's in Mooney Ponds. Julie, we don't have a long time, but welcome.
Look, I just wanted to say congratulations to JP, and I hope you publish your work. I know the journey you've been on. I understand. Oh. Be proud and never, ever deny your title.
No.
Too often I do, because people who have a Bachelor of Medicine frown on someone who's been through a PhD process.
Well, Dr. Julie, thank you, because I think you should wear that doctor title proudly.
Look,
as well.
I just want to say it was about us. Like, that whole thesis, I'd love to share it with our family, because it's about us. It's about Phil from Warrnambool. It's about Avis. It's about the characters that make up our lives. It's about Andrew Crook. It's about, you know,
all of those things.
Yeah.
So World Radio Day is today. It is a day to thank broadcasters for the news they deliver, the voices that they amplify, the stories that they share. So we say thank you to our talkback callers.
Who are broadcasters in a way.
Well,
they are.
Without talkback, we got nothing, baby. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Take care, and we'll speak to you soon.